Blog Talk Radio.
Time travel makes me think of tightrope. Fine lines of what you feel and what you fear most. Years ago, you was on, yeah, you drove the boat. Now you know, ain't no hoe, life's no fucking joke. And they got rules to it. The things you don't be doing. This ain't no Pro Tools, we be looping. This ain't no win-lose with no conclusion. Just only how you live today and what you be choosing.
Baby,
soldier for life. The battle I'm fighting has no ending. To struggle is to go the distance. To win is not to care how far one must go.
How you feel?
Fine, sir.
How you feel?
Fine, sir.
How do we get access to this, Jackson?
His lawyers say they can get me in posing as a legal investigator.
You were Huey Newton's lawyer, right?
Yes. And now, Mr. Jackson.
Mitch Jackson was sentenced 1 year to life for a $70 gas station robbery.
We have 2 hours.
Waiting a long time.
We need brothers who can maintain their self-respect in here, have true strength.
Some people are comparing you to Eldridge Cleaver, Richard Wright, Du Bois. How does your fame affect you when you're locked up all day?
Free the Soledad Brothers!
Free the Soledad!
peaceful revolution.
Okay, gentlemen, we're taking over.
Mr. Jackson, sorry about your brother.
He will live to regret it. I'll see you today. Him where
it starring Gary Dordan from TV CSI.
This is the military, David.
Free the land. Grabber sharing greetings. Welcome to another edition of Jordan Unit Radio. I'm your host, Mumani Shakir. Five goals are fivefold. Our first goal is to eradicate functional literacy among new African prisoners. Our second goal is to eradicate cultural ignorance among new African prisoners. Our third goal is to transform the criminal mentality to the new African mentality. Our fourth goal is assisting in rebuilding and stabilization of the new African community. Our fifth goal is to prepare new African prisoners for release, reducing new African recidivism. Our overall goal is transferring the whole criminal slave complex to the apprentice system, the big issue to learn through education and means. And upon doing so, transforming the criminal mentality of revolution mentality so that individuals and be able to come to society and be an institution and program needed for new African people. Before I bring in our guest tonight, I'd like to go over some events that happened in history during this week. On December 10th, 1815, Captain Paul Cuffy sailed from West Point, Massachusetts, and skipped the traveler for Sierra Leone with a crew of 7 and 38 colonists, 18 adults and 20 children. In 1846, Norbert Riley received a patent number 4879 for a vacuum pan evaporation process that revolutionized the sugar industry. In 1864, the 10th through the 29th, a mid-cavalry force, including the 5th and 6th Color Cavalry Regiments, invaded Southwest Virginia and destroyed a salt mine at Saltville. The 6th Cavalry was especially brilliant in their engagement near Marion, Virginia. In 1936, the popular movement for liberation Angola, MPLA, was founded. In 1964, Martin Luther King Jr. won Nobel Peace Prize. And also, I forgot one day, also 1895, on this day, J.B. Allen had in the clothesline. On December 11, 1917, 13 new African soldiers were hanged for alleged participation in the Houston riots. 1923, Morris Turner created the comic strip, and We Paul were born. In 1943, Stu Ellison, New World of Comics premiere at Carnegie Hall, Ellison said he visualized this new world as a place in the distant future where there'd be no war, no greed, no categorization, no non-believers, where love was unconditional, and no pronoun was good enough for God. 1961, U.S. Supreme Court reversed conviction of 16 Baton Rouge, Louisiana city and students. It was on the Civil War time. I mean, Civil Rights time. December 12, 1870, Joseph H. Rangers sworn as the first new African to serve in the U.S. House of Representatives. 1872, Attorney General George Williams sent a telegram to acting Governor Pinchback that a new Arab politician was recognized by the president as the lawful executive of Louisiana. In 1899, George F. Grant passed the Dobbs Act. In 1938, U.S. Supreme Court ruled in Missouri ex-rel gangs that a state must provide equal educational facilities for new Africans within its boundaries. Lord Gaines complained in the case disappeared after the decision and was never located. In 1963, Kenya gained its independence. They were known as the Mau Mau, a.k.a. the Land of Freedom Army. The National Association for New African Journal found in 1975, the largest media organization for people of color. On December 13th, today's date, 1893, a Tennessee judge jails a multiracial family for violating state laws against interracial relationships. 1903, Ella Baker was born. She was one of the founders of a SNCC, Student Nonviolent Coordinator Committee, the Lady McConnell Student National Coordinator Committee, and also a founder of Southern Christian Leadership Council with Martin Luther King. 1911, William A. Hinton, developer of the Hinton test for diagnosis of syphilis, was born. In 1923, Willie Brandt Sr., a civil rights lawyer, was born. In 1945, Black August martyr Jeffrey Guattari Regalia was born. He also was an organizer of what we term now the Black August. The Revolutionary Month of Black August, the Revolutionary Culture of Black August, and also what we term as the Black Organizing Committee. 1986, Armed Black Liberation Army and New African Andes and political president Kwasi Balogun dies. In 2005, Stanley Susan Williams was executed. Before he executed, he transferred a criminal battalion, a revolution battalion, and donned the African name Ajamo Naamke tomorrow. December 14, 1829, John Mercer Langston, the first new African elected to public office, was born. In 1948, two 12-year-old white girls report being attacked by a new African man. Police in Maryland arrested 17 suspects. A year later, admit to making up the attack. In 1968, class at San Francisco State suspended a demonstration Black Student Union and Third World Liberation Front demanded a new African student study program and more non-white students and teachers. In 2014, George Washington University Radio first created its profile on Blog Talk. And December 17th be 9 years that we've been on the air. On December 15th, 1720, Jupiter Hammond was born in slavery. He was probably the first known poetry by a new African. 1864, the 15th through the 16th, one of the decisive battles of the war, two brigades of new African troops have crushed one of the South's finest armies at the Battle of Nashville. New African troops opened a battle on the first day and successfully engaged the right of the rebel line. On the second day, Colonel Charles L. Thompson, R. Thompson, New African Brigade made a brilliant charge up against Overton Hill. The 13th USCT sustained more casualties than any other regiment involved in the battle. In 1897, 400 white men lynched Tom Waller in Lawrence County, Mississippi. Days after lynching, another New African man was lynched for the same alleged crime. In 1934, Maggie Lena Walton, first New African woman to head a bank, died in Richmond at the age of 69. In 1980, physicist, Dr. Sylvester James Gate was born. In 1987, Chuck McClark was born. She passed away at age 89. She's a member of SNCC and Southern Christian Leadership Council. December 16, 1816, William Cooper Neal, author of the first history of the African Americans, were born. 1859, John Copeland and Shields Green, two new African members of the John Brown Band, were hanged at Charleston. They're part of John Brown Resistance in Kansas City. 1870, the Colored Methodist Episcopal Power Church was organized in Jackson, Tennessee. Diane L. Chisholm was born in 1930. He was a new African attorney representing many civil rights leaders and grassroots organizations during the struggle for voting rights and against segregation. In 1945, he's our new African family refused to leave their white Fontana, California neighborhood. An explosion destroyed their home and killed all four family members. In 1961, the Umkonte Way Kidsway Field the nation military wing of the African National Congress was formed. 1976, Representative Andrew Young of Georgia named ambassador and chief delegate to the United Nations. So those are the events that happened in history during this week. Of course, we know more but it was just some of them. First of all, I thank everybody who joined our broadcast in 2014. I thank everybody who currently educating themselves in their community respectfully, their family, their collectives, and currently being the change that we want that they want to see, that we all talk about, and being the message that they bring. Because tonight, we're going to be talking to the sister, True Infinite. I'm about to open a line so she can introduce herself.
All right, free the land, free the land.
How are you doing, Trees?
I'm doing all right this evening. I'm doing all right. Thank you for having me. It's definitely a pleasure.
True indeed. First of all, thank you for coming to our broadcast. Sure, you're not the one to stand. Well, thank you for what you can do in the past, the present, what you can do in the future, right? For the people who are listening, people who are going to be listening in the future, tell the people about who you are. Where are you from? You know what I'm saying? How you come about? You know, tell us a little about your background, who you are, you know?
All right. Well, let's get into it. First and foremost, I'm True Infinite. That's my attribute, my righteous attribute. Most people call me by my government name, which is Tia L. Gia. I am a Miami native, 305 Dade County. I'm born and raised here all my life, you know? And I come from a strong background, of course, of women in my family, two devoted parents, siblings, things of that nature. So family is first for me, always, above all, you know? Because if I couldn't reach my family, how can I reach the people? That is always my motto, and that's something that I often quote to people, you know? So being here in Dade County amongst what I would say a lot of diversity, you know, it has shaped and molded me in many fashions to be appreciative, you know, of being connected to all kinds of people, you know, on various levels. So, you know, pretty much that's it. I'm here in the community, do community work. I've been doing this for over a decade here, dedicated to, you know, just the building of what we often say a better people. You know what I'm saying? Here in Dade County, originally out of Dade County, I am from Kara City, born and raised. Shout out to Kara City. They now call it Miami Gardens, which was established in 2003, but it's originally Kara City. But definitely my face is good in every hood. I definitely have to give a shout out to Overtown, Bucktown, my people over there, those off of 15th and 69th Street, 18th Avenue. You know, these are areas that I still frequent here in Dade County, you know, just to be connected to my people and get out there as much as possible. You know, all of my schooling has been here. You know, I never left home, so this is where my heart is. And I still continue now after all of this time to stay as rooted as possible within my community, within my county, with my people in the city. I just love the city. I am Miami, you know, and I can say that regardless of my elevation and my growth and things of that nature over this time, I am Miami, you know?
Well, indeed. You know, you mentioned the family, right?
Mm-hmm.
How significant is it for us to have a functioning African family, and have you seen any differences in the family structure from growing up as a little girl to now?
Oh, yes, of course. What I would first and foremost say to that, something my mom used to tell me, a tree is nothing without its roots. You know, and it can't even bear fruit. So when it comes to the family structure and being connected to your family, knowing your history, knowing where you come from, it kind of enriches your experience throughout life. You know, as you go and venture off and to do your own things, you never forget the things that are instilled in you from the time that you come up to the time that you get to, like I say, go off and do your own thing. And coming today's time, we get disconnected from that because of the stuff that is being introduced to us in this society. We know that as a people, particularly New African people, there are a lot of things that have been put in place to divide us and at most take us away from our roots, because of course they rather have us to be interested and invested in other things besides having that connection to who you are. I definitely have to throw in there today's degree. What is your own self? So when you examine your own self, you're going to take those different components from everything that you have gathered in life, you know, and that started at home first. From the time that you identified coming into your consciousness in this world, learning how to speak, how to walk, even the things down to what you eat, you got that from someone that was help you become rooted. You know what I'm saying? What I'm trying to say, help you become rooted. And we don't have these things no more. We definitely don't even put emphasis on it anymore. Is what I see in today's time, you know. So it's imperative for people, like I say, to those who are in the know, those who are putting forth the effort to be connected and be rooted, you know what I'm saying, to have your foundation solid, and it starts at home first. That's the same thing I tell the youth every day. Everything starts at home first. Because that's where I got it from. And those are the things that I continually try to emphasize on and implement in my everyday life, as far as to lead by example and display that as well. So family is very important to me, because I wouldn't be the person I am now without my family. Like I said, although I have ventured out to do other things and learn other things, my family is my foundation at the end of the day. They made me the person who I am, starting with my mother and my father, and going so on and so forth throughout my family tree. You know, I wouldn't be the person I am today. I would not have had some of the thoughts that I have in order to apply them and put them into action if it was not sparked by my root, my family, my foundation. So family is very important to me. And like I say, those are components that we are missing today. Being connected to our roots. And I'm not necessarily saying when I say family that it just has to be about those that you are blood related to. It's about the family that you make as well, you know, because we can't go alone. We have to go together. So that's my emphasis on family right there.
Sound good to me, because I realized that a family is a prototype to any kind of ideal or concept of building a nation. You know, mm-hmm. Every family has their own government system.
Right.
Every family has their own types of policies. Every family has their own economic basis, you know. So that's a prototype and a nutshell of what it looks like to build a nation, you know, mm-hmm. especially come historically. Like I mentioned, Kenya gaining independence. Okay. The Bamas, when you look at their history of people in Kenya, They actually profess and believe that the land belongs to them, or ordained to them by the Creator. So they built their aspect, their nation up on the aspect of family. Mm-hmm. It was a brother that had seven daughters, and all the seven daughters found a husband, so they created families. And all the families became tribes. Now they try to get a form of nation.
That's
you know,
right.
And based on like a historical analogy in regards to how Kenya came about, you know, and you look at that aspect of things that we're dealing with in regards to the family element, you know.
Yeah.
You know, I understand that you had your own varied names and attributes throughout your life, right? What are some of the significance of some of the attributes and names in your life? You know, what do they mean to you, and how does some of the and quality come about?
Okay. For one, let's start with my righteous attribute that I have come into, True Infinite. True Infinite. Definitely dealing with actual facts, you know? True. And as I see it, we know that the universe bursts infinite possibilities. You know what I'm saying? And it's equivalent to the woman because, as we know, the black woman harvests the energy of the black man and manifests it into reality in real time. And as above, so below, we know that it does the same thing. You know what I'm saying? So that's how I see myself, true infinite, by coming to the people, standing in my truth, shaping and molding the things that I know and apply in real time to give them an understanding of how I see the world, just in basic terms of leading by example. So that's why that attribute fits me. But also I was given that name because someone seen my action and was able to speak for me and be able to give me that name. And I own it, and every day I strive to live up to it, being the truth, walking in conviction with what it is I do and how I see my reality and the things around me, and reaching out to my people, you know, because first and foremost, that's just what it is, dealing with things as they are and not what I want them to be. And like I say, just doing it in real time, you know, being that one that stand out there in the front to make all things around me understand that you have to have the discipline and the willpower to bring these things forth that you are trying to do, to make the change, to make it possible. And that is true infinite to me. It's unmeasurable. You can't contain it. You can't hold it. Because it's going to keep doing what it needs to do in order to see things forth in real time. Now, being called a queen, that's another thing to me. Being that we know that a queen is one, some people would say one that rules, but I say that's one that is graceful, one that is contained, one that is disciplined, one that is qualified to be an authority of decision-making. But I can't emphasize it enough, saying leading by example, because it's on me. This is what I know on me, to show people what it is I want them to see and know about me. And that has to come through my ways and my actions. You understand? So that's what it is to me with those particular attributes and names. I go by many names. As you said, I wear many hats. But those are the ones that I like in particular that I'm grateful for and I'm appreciative for when people acknowledge me. And I walk with it proud. And like I said, I just continue to try to display myself in that right and walk in conviction in my truths, knowing that I am capable and able and willing and disciplined enough to hold my own in all rights.
Indeed. You know, you mentioned earlier about being in the community, right?
Mm-hmm.
What exactly does that mean to be in the community? What exactly does that mean, you know?
Oh, man, being in the community, what that actually means. Being out there with your people, man, interacting with your people, you know, talking to the people. Because sometimes those of us that say we are, we miss the simplicity in that, being amongst the people, seeing what they see every day, getting it from their perspective, you know, because true enough, we all hold information, you know what I'm saying? We all hold information from the most intelligent
to ignorance. And you know what I'm saying? We all hold some type of information. And when you out there in the community, truly, you're going to encounter it all. You know what I'm saying? You're going to encounter it all. And that's where you get your drive from. If you truly live a life where you want to educate in order to liberate, you have to be out there in the element. You have to be out there amongst the people, because that's where it's at. These are the people that you're trying to reach. These are the people that you're trying to help. And in turn, they help you be the best you that you can be. Because regardless of what level or degree you're on, you're going to see a reflection of yourself somewhere. Because I often tell my comrades or people who proclaim to be conscious, you were once one who knew not, right? So if you're not out there in the community, it's like you harboring the information that you have and you're not trying to share it, you know? So getting out there in the community is the most, like I would say, the most pivotal aspect of doing this work in this nation building process. You know, you have to do that. That's a requirement to be amongst the people, because we are the people at the end of the day. Nothing is going to move without the people in the communities. Nothing. Nothing is going to get done. We need them. We cannot go alone. So it's important, it's imperative, rather, to have those interactions, to spend that time, to sacrifice whatever it is you need to sacrifice if it's important to you. You know, being amongst the people. Because community is going to be the basis of what we are going to need to carry out this mission on the things that we have to do. So that's just my fee on it, you know. Community is everything, because we can sit amongst each other and read 1,000 books and quote everything that we find in these books and have these conversations and participate on these panels. But if we are not out there actually doing the work and interacting with the people to see it from their perspective, because we already have in our mind of how we see it, but you definitely have to get an overall view of really what's going on to get a proper assessment. So community is one of the most important components. Like I say, you can read 1,000 books, participate on 1,000 panels, but if you're not out there for real, you can't really tell me personally, that you really know what's going on. And by no means am I saying you have to live it, but you have to know or be in the know about what's going on, because if not, then you're just doing a bunch of lip service. If you're not actually out there applying whatever knowledge that you have and sharing your information and also getting feedback, you know, nothing's going to come about what you're doing. You're just basically doing it for the benefit of yourself and truly not doing it for the benefit of the people.
Okay. I can see on that, you know, especially in this new modernist society, you know, people do a lot of things for recognition,
mm-hmm.
For accolades, for some kind of claim, some kind of fame or
that's
popularity.
Right.
You know,
right.
And that doesn't amount to anything. There are many nameless revolutionary, nameless social scientists, nameless nation builders that don't pay the weight, and she are paying the weight right now in this modern day time.
Right.
You know, my next question here, I want to know.
I wanted to touch on that, though, before you go to your next question. Because me and you have actually had a conversation about this, definitely how I see it. Me, personally, True Infinite, Tia, I never mind anybody who truly knows me or anybody who I interact with in the community knows that I never mind being the nameless revolutionary. I don't need to have my face everywhere. I don't need to have my name everywhere. Because when I came to do what I'm doing now and stand on what I stand on now, come to be pointed out, because I knew my life and how I see it did not come with trophies and accolades, you know? It didn't come with no reward. It genuinely came from my heart. As I say, I'm from Miami, 305. Most people that from here, or even some people that don't visit here, and I'm not talking about on the east side of I-95 with the beaches and the sun and all that y'all see on TV. I'm talking about on the west side of the bridge where you get your open lockers, where you get your poke and beans, where you get your Edison projects in Overtown. You know what I'm saying? We have a different aspect of our conditions. So it was genuinely from the heart. I was just a young woman, a young sister out here that had did enough destroying, and I wanted to do something different with my life, especially when I started learning, you know, breaking away those chains of indoctrination that kept minds so suppressed and repressed. I wanted to do something different. I wanted to change my community. I got tired of looking at it ugly. I got tired of my friends dying, all my brothers getting locked up, my sisters having babies after babies in poverty and things of that nature and not knowing nothing, not how to value themselves, not cherishing themselves as queens, you know? And I got tired of seeing that. So when I linked up with my brothers, and shout out to my brothers down here in the collective, Black Cloud and all of them, when I linked up with them, I just wanted to do something different. And we started off real small, carrying an RBG flag saying we was going to feed the people, clean up the neighborhood, going purchasing trash bags, going around the corner stores picking up trash, talking to the people, handing out flyers, trying to organize. See, this is what we want to do in our community because we see the funds that's coming in our community, them people not doing it. They not cleaning up nothing. They not trying to tell my sister about nothing but sit down and have a bunch of babies and she can get a check. Or they locking my brother up because he in poverty and he trying to make him a couple of dollars. We want to do something different with our minds and our bodies to apply ourselves in our community. So my name wasn't ringing. I didn't care if anybody knew my name. I genuinely did it from the heart. But I started to also see when titles get involved, like you say, people get in there for attention and recognition. When them titles came involved, people started to change. It no longer became about passion and purpose. It was about egos. And who know me, and who name can ring the loudest, and what scene I can be on. And still to this day, for me, it's passion and purpose. I don't care about titles. Just in all honesty, I'm glad I'm able to do this interview because now I can tell people on how, people who don't know me, rather, how I see it. But at the end of the day, if you all never knew my name, it wouldn't matter to me. Because this is the life I chose, and I know what it comes with. It's going to come with the struggle. It's going to come with me having to fight. Therefore, I got to keep bringing forth my willpower in order to do so, continue to condition myself so I'll be able to keep doing so, and that's it. But you knowing my name, honestly, and I'm not trying to sound arrogant to anybody, it does not matter to me. Because I do it from my heart. I fell in love with being righteous and having my humanity and caring about my people. Because it goes back to where? At home. I was taught that. I come from a big family. As I was saying, five women. My grandparents had five girls. So I'm a nurturer by nature. I was taught that. To care about people. To want to love on my people. And also just to mention my mother. My mother came up in a time where she had no other choice but to be black. As I shared with you a while ago, my mama come from a sundown town called Clewiston, Florida. You know them sundown towns where they say Negroes couldn't cross the railroad track after a certain time? You hear me, Brother Bumani?
Yes, ma'am. I hear you.
Yeah, they couldn't cross the track at a certain time. They had to go back, cross that track, go south, cross that track. My mama came up in that type of time. So she ain't had no other choice but to be black. And I am grateful that she instilled that in me, to be proud, to know who I am, and more importantly, love on your people, because at the end of any day, we all we got. And yeah, some of us, we get off the handle from time to time, but we got to understand why we got that way, how we got that way, you know? So being that I know these things, you know, and I'm just saying it as simple as a baby can understand it. Being that I know these things, this is what continues to be my drive to this day. So again, nobody has to know my name. What's in me is on me. And I can't change that. But you can go ahead to your next question.
Okay. I know you did mention, like, you're going to commit with the RBG flag, right? For the people who are listening now, or the people listening in the future, what is actually the RBG flag? And also, by Miami being a cesspool, or you want to say a whirlpool of ethnicities and nationalities and backgrounds and different hues and shades and colors, right? Mm-hmm. How do these politics mix in regards to different people, in regards to, like, okay, for instance, you know, you got Lil Haiti, you got Lil Cuba, you got Lil such and such, such and such, all these different places, right? But you going in the community, you know, the red, black, and green flag, or you saying you're part of a black collective, or whatever, you saying you're New African. How do these things mix? How do they intertwine? You know what I'm saying? What's the dynamics of diversity there? You know what I'm saying? Tell us more about this, you know, about that in general.
Okay. We'll start with the RBG flag. Of course, you know, the Pan-African flag, and the red, black, and green flag. And it symbolizes the solidarity and the unity among our people of African descent coming out of the UNIA with Marcus Mogarvey and the Universal Negro Improvement Association. And that's all I want to touch on. I'm quite sure people know a lot more about the RBG flag, but I want to go into us carrying it around, right, here in Miami. So this started over a decade ago, you know, and my recollection is that we were the only people carrying this flag. When we would go out, you know, like I said, my comrade, my dear brother, had a really big one. So every time we would mount up and go out together, he would have this very big flag just flying. And, you know, people looked at it, you know, a little weird, it's different color. I'm quite sure some people have seen it before, depending on what generation they were coming from. But, you know, a lot of people really didn't deal with it too much from what I know, you know. Of course, like I say, due to indoctrination, you would see the United States flag everywhere, but, you know, not too many people had red, black, and green flags. Nobody was really calling themselves black, my generation, black nationalists or pan-Africanists or whatever one might refer it to when it comes to representing ourselves in a way to want to establish our own identity aside from that which we have been taught. You know what I'm saying? So when it comes to that here in Miami, now I see is very relevant since Juneteenth. I would say that now I've been seeing it a lot more the last 5 or 6 years. But being that I say Miami is so diverse and you have all type of ethnicities and nationalities of people, but I would just touch on those that I know, whether they acknowledge it themselves or not, that I know of African descent. I can't say they were really intertwined into it either. You know, everybody down here pretty much do their own thing. The people do mix and mingle because, of course, here we in the same space. But when you're talking about being on a level of black nationhood, as one would like to refer to it as black nationhood, I can't necessarily say that I see that here in my city all the time. You know, we have some areas like Little Haiti. You know, my Haitian brothers and sisters are very proud people. And I commend them, being that it's a long history with them here in Dade County. You know, I have this conversation a lot, a long history here with them in Dade County, coming through a social class type of dynamic. You know what I'm saying? Social class. They had to rise up in the ranks, just like a lot of our brothers and sisters that come from the Caribbean island and things of that nature. It was a class struggle for them, you know. But when you talk about, touch base about little Cuba and things of that nature, it's the same thing, but then that's when the colorism aspect comes into play here in Dade County. So when you have these different little sections, you know, people pretty much do their own thing. But now that we are recognizing our conditions, when I was talking about new Africans, recognize their conditions on a broader scale, now they are starting to see the divide, you know, because we didn't always see that. You know, we definitely wasn't taught that. But now we are starting to see it, especially how things are now in modern times, you know, dealing with an economic and a class struggle when it comes to ethnicity, you know, because we have certain people here that don't acknowledge themselves as being a part of a ethnicity as a whole. You know, people more focus more on their nationality than anything here in Dade County, you know, besides those other people. But I don't want to talk negatively about my city. It's a beautiful city. It's a beautiful city. Don't get me wrong. The people are beautiful. It has a culture within itself that is beautiful. But it's definitely an economic struggle here, and it's definitely classism. It's definitely colorism, things of that nature. But like I say, with my Haitian brothers and sisters, my Jamaican brothers and sisters, who else? Bahamian. We have Cruisin, those from St. Croix. These are all people that are spread out in the Caribbean. You know what I'm saying? Even though we had a Dominican Republic and a Haiti right there on the same peninsula, you know, they are different people, and they acknowledge that. They, you know, we know the truth. But still to this day, a lot of them don't know the truth, knowing how interconnected they are, you know. So definitely that's what we face the most here in Dade County. If I explain that to your understanding.
Oh, yeah. That's a good understanding, especially in regards to, like, the aspects of, like, for instance, you mentioned Haitian and Dominican, right?
Mm-hmm.
And what I'm just gonna say Puerto Rico also, right?
Mm-hmm.
But all three of them share in common that all three of them have a lighter version of themselves and a darker
mm-hmm.
version of themselves.
Mm-hmm.
The problem
mm-hmm.
with the dark skin Haitian, the dark skin Puerto Rican, dark skin Dominican.
Mm-hmm.
So I want to say they're white Puerto Rican, the white Dominican, and the white Haitian. You know,
mm-hmm.
that aspect of things.
Same
you
thing
know,
with Cubans. Same thing with Cubans, yeah.
Yeah, no doubt. You know,
yeah.
So people want to say that over six glasses. I understand exactly what you're saying. You know, that actually means a lot in regards to the political ideology, you know, in regards to how the state utilized that and capitalized on that situation to turn us against each other. It capitalized
right.
on that all
That's
the
right.
time, you know. So
That's
that
right.
makes a lot of sense.
And we have a dynamic here. We have a dynamic here. And like I say, not to talk negatively about my city, but it's a dynamic here with the so-called Hispanic population. And when I say Hispanic, don't get me wrong. I'm not talking about all those who say, so when I say all those, I'm going to say Puerto Rican. I'm going to say Nicaraguan. I'm going to say Dominican. And I'm going to add Cuban in there. I'm not going to say all those who acknowledge themselves from being of having some type of Hispanic background or coming from a Hispanic descent. I'm not talking about all of them. Specifically, I'm going to talk about our Cuban population. You know, a lot of our Cuban population is, especially those that are into so-called power here, you know, on the political aspect, economic aspect, so-called power. They might be the lighter-skinned Latinos or Hispanics. They might be lighter skinned. So that's where a lot of the colorism comes into play, because in a lot of ways they oppress or even repress to a degree their own so-called nation of people, you know. So we go through a lot of that here, and we watch that. And like I say, having mindsets like that, you know, it goes to a degree of indoctrination where even new Africans will take on the same mentality, you know. So, like I say, the whole the educate to liberate thing, it's heavy emphasis on that with people who walk the same walk that I do, that strive to explain, to give them some knowledge so that they can get an understanding how this all came about. You know what I'm saying? How this all came about. Because it happens a lot here, you know. Me being as dark as I am, you know, I used to hear my cousin joke, he was like, "You blacker than the ace of spades." He used to say that to me all the time, you know. And then I can meet someone who speaks Spanish that's my same color, you know, and we can relate more opposed to them talking to their people that speak Spanish that's lighter, you know, because we face the same class struggle. We face the same struggles when it comes to colorism and things of that nature. So that happens a lot here. That happens a lot here.
Interesting. You know, that's a part of the complexity of life. You know, they're very interesting in regards to the social construct and the social change, social reality that we're dealing with.
Mm-hmm.
You mentioned New African, right? When the first time you heard that term, and why did you make the decision to claim your New African citizenship, and what does that mean to you?
Okay, the very first time I heard the term New African, it was 13 years ago, exactly 13 years ago. I met the elder. I went to a meeting. I believe it was an NCOBRA meeting. NCOBRA, you know, the National Coalition of Blacks for Reparations in America, here in Miami chapter, with General Ali Rashid. And also Fatima Mez was there. And, you know, may rest in power, Fahim RBG Ali. And I was there with them. I went to go meet with them. I told you the comrade Black Cloud introduced me to them. He told me, come on out, sister, you might like it. So I went there, and that was my first time hearing the New African Creed. It was read out loud to me. New African. And that stuck in my mind, see, because I told you about my upbringing. My mother came from a town where she had no other choice but to be Black. So I had an upbringing of what I would consider now, that I know better, Afrocentric views that was instilled into me, you know. So we always knew about Kwanzaa. We always, like I say, practiced just doing communal things. Some people might call it tribalism, where we ate together, you know. You know, Christians call it communion, things of that day. We just got together and, you know, did stuff like that. But I heard the term New African going to that meeting that night. And it stuck with me because I wanted to know more about it. And they read the creed, and I'm like, wow, what is this? You know, and then the elder got up there and started talking more about his background. And, you know, the sister Fatima Mez, she started talking about her background, you know, being somewhat like an internationalist. I would refer to her as that. And, you know, speaking all these languages and things, but she was still saying, New African, New African. So that sparked my interest, and I wanted to know more about it. So they started giving me information, you know, pamphlets and things to read. about the provisional government of the Republic of New Africa. You know, then I seen the oath, you know, for the fruition of black power, you know, and I got to admit, around that time, I was listening, you know, on YouTube, Khalid Muhammad. I even heard a little Sarah Sutta Steady, black power, black power. So that whole black power thing was ringing in my ear. But I remember from childhood, Kwanzaa, the African dresses, the African dances, just learning about Africa. This is where we come from, the cradle of civilization. But New Africans? Never heard of New African. So like I say, it was sparking my interest and I want to know more about it. So as time went on and I learned and I studied and things of that nature, New African people of African descent or enslaved Africans in America. Yeah, as we all know, that's our history, a part of our history. We had enslaved ancestors that went through some of the most atrocious things, but still produce generations of resilient warriors. And I, you know, and I started digging more into the history, learning about our people, I will mention some men, Denmark Vesey, and, you know, you start learning about all these different freedom fighters. You start hearing about Nat Turner. You know, I started learning about Dudley Bookman over there in Haiti in the Haitian Revolution in 1804. You know, I'm just starting to learn about all these fabulous things, but they connected to Africans, but still it's hitting me, New African. I'm learning about New African, you know, being connected to enslaved Africans, and you hearing about all these revolts and the conditions that these resilient have been in, but they were stripped away from their culture, from their language, their identity, everything that they once knew about themselves. Again, what is your own self? It was taken away from them. So that question came. New African. So how it came back to me is, what is a New African? I am connected to glory, pain, struggle, and beauty in a new land that my people knew nothing about. But now me, my generation, with now that I have found out this connection and acknowledging this connection even in my everyday life, because I live a life that is full of glory, struggle, beauty, and pain, and still carry these values. Yes, I am an African. Yes, I am connected to my resilience, warrior, intelligent ancestors to create or have a new way of life here in a foreign land. New African. Because I'm going to hold on to my values. I'm going to hold on to my principles. I am going to walk in my humanity, because this is what my people did. Perhaps from the beginning of time, and came here and faced all this and still lived, still can walk proudly in conviction. Yes, I am a New African. And this is the land that my ancestors built. Blood, sweat, tears, and bone. I'm entitled to this. They say I'm not, but I am, because I know what I'm connected to, what I still continue to manifest through my DNA every day. I'm a New African. So I will do it for the fruition of black power and for the triumph of black nationhood by any means necessary.
And that's that. And New African. Go ahead, brother.
Okay. True indeed. I know you had mentioned earlier about your background, about growing up, right? Learning certain things, right? What are some of the lessons that you learned growing up that basically inspired you to be the woman you are today?
That inspired me to be the woman I am today.
Yeah, some of the lessons, I know you saying that you watching certain things, you learned about certain things, you were hearing certain thoughts,
Okay, one more. Well, like I say, it has to go back to my childhood. Giving honor to my mother, growing up in the time that she did. My parents, they were kind of mature. I'm gonna say mature. I'm not gonna call their age out, but they were mature when they had me. And because of such, unlike the other children that had to go out. Hold on. It had to go out and run around and play a lot. I sat around and I listened. I listened to the grown folks talking. They wasn't gossiping or nothing. My mother was a great debater. That's what my family would call her, a great debater. So I listened to a lot of what she was talking about when it came to history, science, mathematics, because my mother was an educator as well. My mother was a lawyer. She practiced in law. That was her profession. She practiced in law. And she would love to show off her intelligence, And coming up in the time where, as I said, she had no other choice but to be black, that was important to her, to be black and show off her intelligence. And let people know that she wasn't dumb, or an idiot that they expected most New Africans to be in her time, coming up. So, it was important to her that she taught a sense of pride to me because I'm her baby and her only girl. That's first and foremost. So it was important to her that she instilled a sense of pride in me, not just being for intelligence, but also being a woman and being black in this society, right? So coming up, like I say, the Afrocentric things, I didn't do like other children, for instance, when the holidays came around. We didn't sit around and just play with toys and watch what is that show that come on TV, that movie, A Christmas Story. We didn't watch that, When we spent Christmas, most Christmas, not at our own home, but with my grandparents. See, my grandparents came from Alabama. My grandfather came from a place called Society Hill in Alabama there. And my grandmother... I think she was from around the same area, but nevertheless, they were from Alabama, right? And they migrated here to Florida to work in the fields, sugar cane, things of that nature. So, coming out of Alabama during that time in the 20s and 30s, we know, as history has showed us, what those times were about, So spending Christmas and holidays with my grandparents, we didn't do the traditional so-called American or African-American thing. When we sat down, my grandfather would force us to watch movies like Roots, Uncle Tom's Cabin, Mandingo, Queen, anything to teach us about the history that they may have lived in their time, my grandparents, or that it was even closely related
to the struggle that they had to go through in order to pave a way for my generation to come or the generations after them to come, you know. So these things I was exposed to at a young age, like I say, Kwanzaa, things of that nature, just anything connected to what they felt like or had learned, rather, I want to say learned, rather, and then felt like belonged to original people. And striving to keep us away as much as possible from having a complete Eurocentric mindset. It was important to them that we knew who we were, what was going on in the society, and how society would treat us. And as my mom, being an educator and a woman of great intelligence, it was important for me to know that knowledge is power. Can I share a story as well, growing up?
Go ahead.
Yeah, I'll never forget. I was in the third grade, right? And I had a crush on a little boy in the third grade. Now, you know, he's a little girl, he's a little crush on the back. I thought he was cute, you know, but, you know, we wasn't doing all that back then, how they are now. But I'm not even making a comparison because, you know, a lot of things go on. But I had a little crush, and I'll never forget. He told me, he said, I don't like you, because, you know, how little girls used to fight little boys and stuff, and we used to ride our bikes together. He kicked me off the bike one day, and I started crying because, like I said, he was my little crush. I thought he was cute. I liked him. He was my friend. And he kicked me off the bike, and he says, you fat, you black, and you ugly. That's why I don't like you. And I went home crying to my mama. And I seen my mama and told my mother about it, and I would never forget that. When I was sitting there crying in her face, she looked at me and gave me the book, I Know Why the Caged Bird Sings by Maya Angelou, and told me, go read this. As to say, well, gesture rather, get out my face, I don't want to hear your crying, go read this book, right? I'll be honest with you, that hurt me for a long time. And I, on my 16th birthday, because I never forgot it, 16th birthday for the third grade, I asked my mother, I said, why did you do that? Because that hurt my feelings. You know, it made me feel some type of way. Why did you do that? And my mother told me, out of her own mouth, she said, I don't want you to ever think that you got the luxury of being a beautiful fool. To this day, and I'm 40 years old, that stood out to me. Knowledge is power. So when I look back on those jewels growing up, my grandparents sitting down with me, watching those movies, talking about their history in Alabama and their journey from out there cold in Alabama during the winter to have to come to Florida to work in the fields to make their money, and how them white people treated them, and how my grandmama had to work up in them white people in the big house because they stayed in a place where they called a camp. It was kind of like a plantation. It was called Ritter Camp. You know, they had these little camps all around Lake Okeechobee. You know, you had one in Pehokee. You had some in Belglades, South Bay. Ritter was right there between South Bay and Clewiston. That's where my grandparents was at. And my grandmama worked and raised these people cheering and things of that nature. You know, all them little jewels came back at me to understand why I was raised the way that I was raised, why I was taught the way that I was taught, to have awareness not only about me, to instill a sense of pride over the things that they gave me and taught me about me and put the things in my mind to know that, like I say, knowledge is power. You need to learn so you can be aware of what is going on in this society and how you're going to deal with it, you know? So I just wanted to share that story really quick because I don't fault my mother ever for making me feel no type of way. If anything, it empowered me, especially by the time I got to be my adult age. You know what I'm saying? To know like you just can't go off of looks alone, especially being a black woman here in this society. You need to know, because what you have there in your dome, they can't take it away from you. They can probably try to strip you of everything else, particularly materialism. But what you know, they can never take it away from you. And they instill these things in me at a very early age to learn about history, to learn about myself, not just the negative aspects of history, but like I say, going back, we all taught about Nefertiti. We all taught about the kings and queens in Egypt. We are all taught about, queens and kings that led armies that were black people, that had things, that took care of their people, took care of their tribe, took care of their villages, things of that nature, and family, the family structure, most vital building block, as you say, to nation building. I learned these things, and I'm appreciative of it. I'm appreciative of it. You talk about my upbringing.
Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am. That's a beautiful thing. When you hear the name George Jackson, what comes to your mind when you hear the name George Jackson?
Oh.
Your perspective.
Leading by example. Willpower. Wasn't scared to do what he felt that was necessary to help his people, you know. But I really, like I said, the image, because I don't know the brothers. It's like I didn't know Malcolm. None of them. In person, we only read about these people, you know. I love the image. But from things that I have read and have taken in, Brother George, first and foremost, took a criminal mentality and turned it into a revolutionary mentality to show us to this very day of what we can do to strive and help our people. Applied it in real time, the things that he learned, the things that he took in, and actually tried to put it into practical application. You know what I'm saying? And like I say, I haven't deep dived into George Jackson, pretty much just on the surface, but that's what I have taken in from learning about George Jackson and the other comrades. Because to this day, he is the inspiration to something that, like I say, taking it from behind the walls, bringing it to the outside, and we still honor and practice to this day, Black August principles to stand on to this day. You know, so that's, like I say, leading by example, doing what he felt that was right and righteous and holding on to his humanity, his will, and love for the revolution. To want to change, even under the circumstances he was in, and want to change it. And like I say, you got to this very day, and that was a long time ago, but you got to this very day that people still live by those principles. People still strive to exemplify it and still live by it. So, yeah, George Jackson was a great, great, great brother. Great, great brother, I would say, even from, that I do know about him. I have read about him, rather.
I actually might with that assessment. That was a very good assessment in regard to who Comrade George is, what he means, what he stands for, the type of influence he has. Like, you look at it right now, we're on George English Radio.
Mm-hmm.
A whole structure, formation, and his name,
right.
In regard to his teachings, in regard to his ideology, in regard to his religious spirit.
Right.
In regard to his mind state, in regard to his courage, so forth and so on, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that's a beautiful thing within itself, right? Hold up. At this time, I'm going to open the line for a few callers, right? Anyone got any question, comment, or statements at this time, please pick one of them, open your line. Anyone got any question? How much statements or announcements? Do you press one? I hope you're lying this time. If anyone got any questions, how many statements at this time? Press one. I hope you're lying. Okay. I don't see that. I see my impression once. Okay, that's all good. Okay, I guess I'm going to come over and line up. 706-350 Lizo. If you got any questions, comment, state, please do the phone. 706-350 Lizo. Go ahead.
Can you hear me?
Yes, I hear you. Go ahead.
Okay. All right, peace, sister. I just wanted to first just give honors and salute to you for the work that you're doing. And I know you had mentioned that you're a natural nurturer, but I know sometimes the nurturer has to be nurtured as well. So I definitely want to give honors to you for your work. And then I want to ask, I know a lot of times on the platforms I hear a lot of males, and that's no slight to any males because it's definitely needed. But it's also good to hear the women that are helping out in the community and also trying to help the environment. So as a woman, what would you say or why is it important to have the help of the women in the community?
Oh, okay. Why is it important, imperative to have the help of the women in the community? First and foremost, we the first teachers, you know, especially when it comes to the babies. You know what I'm saying? A woman will teach many nations. That is an actual fact, an actual quote of why it is important to have the women in the community, you know, because we serve a particular purpose. You know, as I mentioned, being nurturers, being healers, being teachers first and foremost, you know, and just bringing that feminine energy, you know, because everything has to have a balance. You know what I'm saying? You have to have a mind, you have to have a muscle that go hand in hand. The mind and body go hand in hand. So definitely you need the sisters to be in the community, more inactive, and of course, we know the type of society that we are in and the type of struggles that we go through and the type of attacks that are waged against us. Of course, you need your divine complement to be there, fellas, brothers. You need your divine complement to be there. You need your warrior queens, and you need your sisters to be there full circle, full force. You know, we got to go together. One cannot go alone, you know, and I'm saying that to the sisters too. We cannot go by ourselves. We need our muscle. I'm not saying you weak, sister, but you serve a certain purpose. You know, that's just my belief and my stance. You know what I'm saying? When it comes to equality, a lot of people don't acknowledge it the way that I do. However, like I say, being that we are complements of each other, the man serves a certain purpose and also the woman serves a certain purpose. But when it comes together, it forms the whole. So, like I say, we cannot be apart. We should not be divided and things of that nature. So we need each other. But definitely with the sisters, it's important for us to try to find some common grounds, because I know you speaking on this, sister, like you say, you don't hear a lot of sisters, and we in a type of society that has produced a mentality of indoctrination to strive to keep us apart. Keep us apart. All that has been produced by design, and we must understand that as a people. But it's time that that we have those of us out here that acknowledge this truth and striving to work towards to come back to our common ground, knowing that we are designed to be counterparts and be together to come and combat these problems. And the solution is us being together, and particularly for the sisters to gather around each other and uplift each other. You know what I'm saying? Because we're valuable. We are most necessary at all times. And it's not a time that our brothers didn't exist, that we didn't exist. And we have to understand that. Like I say, with the sisters, though, particularly, once we start understanding our truths and how we need each other, that will make us more interactive and more embracing towards each other as well in our communities, particularly first and foremost in our homes. And we have to get back to that place. So I definitely promote sisterhood all the time. You know, shout out to all of my sisters that feel the same way and take their stands with me, but also acknowledge the fact that we cannot be divided from our brothers. And we know how our brothers are, and we may not like it, but it's going to take us first. Because I always say, and this is my motto, and no shade whatsoever to the brothers, is that they going to follow us if we go ahead and get it right. So we're going to have to set the tone, ladies. We definitely going to have to set the tone, you know. He's going to lead, definitely. But at this point, we have to set the tone. Because as I said in the beginning of the conversation, when I was speaking upon my attribute, True Infinite, we know that the universe, as above, so below, we know that the universe produces possibilities. The universe is like a womb. So when she takes in that masculine energy, she will manifest it in real reality in real time. We have to get back to that type of way of thinking. I yield on that. Anything else you wanted to ask?
Sure about
leaving them. I can't hear you, so say that again.
Can you hear me?
Yes, go ahead. What you said?
Oh, okay. No, I was saying that's all. Thank you so much.
Okay. Not a problem. And thank you for joining us. And like I say, keep building, sister.
Indeed.
Okay. Before you leave, sister, tell us about your organization that you're a part of. Tell us about your organization. Tell us about some of the things you do while you're here.
You talking about me?
I'm talking to you about you.
Okay. Well, I'm a part of Tribe Ejima, located in LaGrange. And we also do a lot of community work as far as community clean. We have programs for the youth to try to inspire them, teach them alternative ways of thinking, but also educating them about their history. We have a local community garden teaching people about producing their own food. And learning natural ways in order to live, not depending on the government, just thinking outside of the regular thinking mentality
right.
that most people have.
Right.
I also a yoga instructor, so I'm introducing that to our community. I'm trying to introduce it to our children as alternative ways to deal with different conflicts instead of the highly medicated percentage of our children in the school system, and also just
mm-hmm.
presenting it as an alternative way to deal with life. And
right.
Business owner of a natural skincare line, which also ties into, you know, helping with the community to educate, to learn how to live off the land and the importance of the land, also to pass
mm-hmm.
the information down to the children. And that's why I was so happy to be on here to listen to you today, to hear another sister in the community. I know you mentioned about not wanting accolades, but sometimes it just comes when you do the work, but you're not looking for it, and it's going to come. But to know that your heart is pure and true in what you're doing in the community, that's certainly a jewel for everybody, everyone that
Thank you
reach such and to come, and I'll yield with that.
Thank you. Thank you very much, and thank you for sharing your information. And likewise, it's always good to interact with my people in general, particularly sisters, like I say, that's out there. And I always encourage sisters to, whatever you're doing, be a master, strive to be a master, rather, at your craft, you know what I'm saying? Because it's always been our time. It was never a time where it wasn't our time. So I tell sisters that always, for one, striving to be encouraging for them to keep at it and don't abandon your vision, especially when your vision benefits yourself and your people as a whole, you know. First and foremost, starting at home, especially if you have children, you know, leading by example, being the first teachers. These children, they watch us more than they listen to us, you know what I'm saying, especially when they get a particular age. So, therefore, like I say, leading by example, teaching them the right things, and sounds like what you're doing, displaying yourself and helping your community and just using that natural essence that you possess. To be a nurturer, to be a healer, to be a teacher, you know, and you're putting that full front, on the front for everyone to see, those that you come in contact with and touch. That's always an awesome thing. So thank you as well for joining in and, you know, just interacting real quickly with us and, you know, let us know what you're doing and what's going on. And I appreciate that. So thank you so much once again. Thank you.
Okay. I appreciate you calling in. So, pretty last.
So that's pretty good. I like that. And like I say, at the end of any day, I just love to hear my people in general doing good and rooting for my people. Are you taking any more questions before I have to say what else I would like to say? Can you take any more questions?
Yeah, if anyone got any question, come with a statement. Please press 1. It is time. Anybody got any question, come with a statement. 3, press 1 this time. I don't see them out there pressing 1, pressing the mic. So you can go ahead and say what you need to say.
Yeah. So, again, it was a pleasure to be up here. You know, I didn't get into detail with a lot of the other things that I wanted to get into detail about, because I think a lot of people pretty much know. Definitely you are a very dear comrade of mine, and I would like to thank you always for the embrace and also the knowledge that you share and the things that you do in real time, you know what I'm saying, putting into application. So I definitely appreciate that. But at the end of the day, just know, True Infinite, a.k.a. Sister Tia, here from Miami, Florida, like I say, coming up off the turf and just wanted to do something different for my people, wanted to love on my people as well as myself, you know, because I want for my people what I wanted for myself. That has always been the MO for me, to want for my people what I want for myself, and that is better than what we have faced when it comes to anything systematic, institutionalized, whatever one might want to refer to, these different degrees of racism, oppression, and repression. I want something different, and I strive to work towards that. You know, as you mentioned in the description, that I just touched bases on it really quickly, the PGRNA has been a blessing to me, because it has given me a lot more insight how things work on a national level. So, like I say, I was mainly involved here, grassroots, connected in my community here in Dade County with my comrades, and it was just a few of us, just a few of us. And a lot of times when it boiled down at the end of any day, it's only a few of us, you know, and I'm grateful for them. I'm grateful for their dedication, their commitment that continues to inspire me to be who I am, you know, and come full circle to what it is that I have a passion and a purpose for. So I definitely appreciate that. And as far as when it comes to my culture and my definitely my foundation and me walking my talk, I have to always give honor and praises to my enlightener as well. Law born ourself, I lie out of Savior's seed. And then also going to my family, you know, all of my siblings, my grandparents, may they rest in power, my mother and my father as well, you know, like I say, just phenomenal people who have shaped and molded the woman that I am today, and just give me that, continue to give me that drive, you know. And like I said, those my ancestors that have passed on, you know, just transferring that energy that I continue to harvest and be able to display on a daily basis, standing in my conviction and walking in my truth about what it is that I, how I see and what I envision and what I keep working towards. So, yeah, definitely. And also to General Ali Rashid, being like a father to me, and I love him to death for that, because he's always been embracing and definitely helped me to, like I say, revolutionize my mind even more, you know, and politicize my mind even more. So I thank him for that. And to my dear brother, Black Cloud, who actually, I got to be honest, introduced me to this particular walk when it comes to any type of revolutionary work, you know. I have to thank him too as well, because he had a great deal to do with my introduction and also with my growth and development. And, you know, the last thing I can say is we here in Miami, you know. Definitely anybody who I can give my contact out, right? Anybody who wants to reach me, I'm on social media platforms. You know, I could be reached by email at pcc.truthinfinite17@gmail.com, things of that nature. And I will continue to honor my oath, my new African oath, because it definitely is for the fruition of Black power and the triumph of the Black nationhood, with my citizenship and being available to do the work in any way that I can, you know, my mind, my time, and my resources, as we say in our creed, you know. And I will definitely continue to just be building for both of my flags, you know what I'm saying, whether it's free the land or it's peace to the gods and earth, I'm going to continue to do that. You know, my walk is my walk, the one I have chosen, and I honor that. My word is my bond, and I definitely appreciate every moment of it that I get to live and breathe it.
True indeed. We got one more caller that want to ask a question. We'll open that line
Right quick. All right.
Okay. 614-285, your line is open. Is there any question, comment, or statement? 614-285, your line is open. If you got any question, comment, or statement, leave this all your time. Your line is open.
Hooray, R.D. Free the land.
Yes, sir.
This is Elder Mama Kandi, and I've been listening through the entire show. I had to actually log off and come back to be able to push one, but that's how determined I was to be able to say to you, sis, you fill my heart. You fill my heart and my shoulders are holding strong and steady so that you can stand on them and do you see what you know and what you have committed to that is correct and righteous. I am so proud of you. I just could burst right now.
Thank you.
I've watched you grow. I've watched you stand strong. I've watched you stumble. I've watched you honest and truthful. I've watched you make mistakes. Sometime I suspect on purpose, just so that we could benefit from them and learn. Because after all, there's only two things to teach, what to do and what not to do.
Right.
And I thank you for both. You are a treasure, and I thank you for flapping your wings in our direction. I yield.
Free the land, free the land. Thank you. Thank you so much. Thank you. Thanks for joining us. And always thank you for the embrace and the love. I definitely appreciate that. I definitely appreciate that.
And that energy is always needed, you know, for us to keep going. You know, like I say, I don't necessarily need the recognition, and, you know, but I'm not going to turn it down either because it keeps me inspired. You know, I often hear this quote, or this phrase rather, that people always make, let the people speak for me. And at the end of any day, I would rather that happen before I have to plaster my name or my face up anywhere. So thank you again, like I say, for always embracing me and being an inspiration as well, you know, because it's all needed. I appreciate it. Thank you.
Okay. So, again, I want to thank you for coming to our broadcast here. Now, we want to thank you for working in the past, present, and future, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I want to give out a few announcements. In Mega Everville, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, the PCC can have a face-to-face meeting. You can find out more information about this on PGR on the Facebook, Twitter, Instagram page, and the website. Also, December 30th, Dr. John Clark Town, known as Columbus, Georgia, you have Dr. John Clark Day. You see the fly on the John Clark Facebook page and Instagram page. Also, next year, Dr. John Clark Town, Columbus, Georgia, we have New Affirmation Day. Find out more about New Affirmation Day. You go on you can find out on the PGR on the website, www.pg.rna.com. Also on the PGR social media sites on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, you can find out more information. Also, you can get your ticket, you can go on Eventbrite and type New Affirmation Day 56, and it'll come up for your tickets. Find out more about New Affirmation Day. And also, if anyone, any comrade, close associate, loved ones, or friends, or relatives behind enemy lines, you can link to Georgia University. We have various sites on social media, on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, now in Georgia University. We also have a website, which is Georgia University, which is www.georgiauniversity.edu.com. And also, if you're interested in learning more about the ASADA Alert Network, and working with sisters who, in regards to bringing, finding our loved ones, our men, our women, our children, our elders, you also can go onto their website. We also can find on Georgia University website as well. You know, also www.ASADA Alert Network also as well, which is a website also to find out more information. You know, I'm saying, long live the resistance, long live the independent movement, long live the guerrilla. This is the last.
Amen.